World's on fire. Our culture is disintegrating.
Hey, pass the salt.
It's time. It's time.
Hey, you, pass the salt.
You know what, why it's disintegrating? Because we're jellyfish.
Pass the salt, will you?
Pass the salt.
Pass the salt, amigo.
It's time. It's time.
I think they could give us a new name. I believe we are Evan Jellyfish.
Hey, will you pass the salt?
Pass the salt.
We need salt over here.
It's time for Pass the Salt.
Pass the salt.
But we like to share the gospel without any backbone to it, see?
The views, opinions, and seemingly outrageous comments expressed on this program are based on the Holy Spirit leading of a man called Coach.
I gotta ask you this out there, Christian America.
It's time for Pass the Salt with a Coach, Dave Dobenmeyer.
Well, fee-fi, fo-fum, I stole the blood of an Englishman. Oh, yeah, we remember all that kind of stuff, don't you? Y'all remember all the tales of the giants and Jack and the Beanstalk and all those? We all remember those as kids, right? Well, what if some of that stuff's true? How do we deal with the idea that in the Genesis 6 in the Bible, Paul Bunyan, yeah, Beth, Paul Bunyan, how do we deal with the fact in the Bible in Genesis 6 that there were giants in the earth in those days and also afters? And those of you who don't know and those of you who do know, I live right in the middle of what L.A. Marzulli and Fritz Zimmerman, who's our guest, is called Nephilim Central. But we know this, that for most people going to church, never even heard of the Nephilim. They don't even know what they are. The church, modern Christianity, just kind of stays away from that. But the Bible tells us those dudes are coming back. Those big old dudes are coming back. Again, that's Genesis 6. And of course, there's the book of the giants. It's not book of Enoch. Those are not really canonical books, but certainly play right along with them. Why aren't they in there? What was the purpose of the flood? Well, we have got what I would say the world's expert, he may not claim that, Fritz Zimmerman, on with us today. Fritz has written several books, and we'll get into all that stuff. Are the giants real? Are the mounds here in Ohio, where I live, were they built by the Indians? Indian mounds? Our local mall is called the Indian Mound Mall. We have mounds all throughout this area over here. Again, as I told you, L.A. Marzulli calls us Nephilim Central. Were these made by giants? The giants of the Bible? Biblical days? Well, we got the expert of experts in with us today. Sit back, call somebody, text somebody, because I'm going to tell you, friends, most of the people you go to church with ain't never heard of it. So we got that crazy man, Fritz Zimmerman, coming in with us. He ain't crazy. Fritz was with us a couple years ago. In fact, we're going to do a conference here. Fritz and I are going to get together, and we're going to get Fritz here in L.A. Marzulli, and we're going to expose exactly what's going on. Hey, Fritz, thanks for getting up on such a short notice early in the morning. We were talking about this on Friday, and a lot of people had never even heard of it. They'd never heard of the Nephilims, the mounds, and I thought, boy, we got to get into that. So, Fritz, come on in, brother. Tell us a little bit about yourself here. Good morning.
Good morning, Coach. Good morning, everybody, all the listeners out there.
Give us a little bio, Fritz.
A little bio. Well, let's see. I started this adventure about in 1996. I happen to live in Fort Wayne, Indiana. We have the second largest genealogical library in the country. What that means is that I have a county history for almost any matter where you live. In the 1800s, they were doing county histories, and I had access to all those. And as I was going, and I was looking for mounds to begin with, but I kept finding giants. It took 12 years, almost 10,000 different books, but I accumulated a list of giants. At first, for the Nephilim Chronicles, Fallen Angels in the Ohio Valley, I had about 300. Then had access to, through the internet, through newspaper archives, and I came out with the Encyclopedia of Ancient Giants in North America, where I had 900 historical accounts of large skeletons that were primarily found in burial mounds. And, of course, the majority of these are in the Ohio Valley. That would include Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, and West Virginia.
Fritz, 900 actual giant skeletons found?
Well, 900 accounts, you know, some of these were mass graves. So there was some where there was, you know, 1,000 in one grave. So we're talking, you know, a lot of skeletal remains found that giant. And when I say giant, you know, my cutoff was 7 foot. And a lot of people would say, well, 7 foot isn't giant. We have 7 footers here today. And I would say, well, true. Possibly, but you have to keep in mind that in a lot of times, like around Charleston, West Virginia, where you have 6 or 7 different mounds that had 7+ foot skeletons in them. And then I'm going to ask you, whatever city you're living in right now, how many people are 7 foot in your city? Let alone having 5 different mounds that would have those in it. So you look at this as sheer numbers and the concentration that we're dealing with, a very large race of people. So, you know, finding a list of giants, I mean, that, you know, that was a lot of work, but really the hard thing, and took me so long, was to answer the question, who were these giants? And then you come across things like gematria, and this is an ancient numerical codex that originated in Babylon, from which these giants in Newark and all throughout the Ohio Valley, their roots are with the accounted giants in the Bible known as the Amorites. The Amorites were a real people. They're mentioned, I think, like 12 or 15 times in the Bible. Real people, they controlled Babylon from the years 2000 BC to 1600 BC. They were noted for their advanced mathematics. They have found different tablets, Sumerian and Babylonian tablets, where their mathematics of trigonometry was more advanced than we have today. And we have found that, and we're going to find, and we're going to talk about that, about the advanced mathematics that we're going to find within the earthworks there in Newark today. And so getting that information, and when I mentioned gematria, and gematria is the numerical codex. 666 was the number for the sun, and 1080 was the number for the moon or earth mother. And most of the earthworks in Ohio are going to come in at 666, 660, and 1080 foot. Now, there was a professor from MIT, smart people. Now, he said that the mound builders in the Ohio Valley were using what we call as the foot, the 12-inch foot. And gematria is based on a base 12 numerical. So base 12, everything's divisible by 12. And we'll find that in the Ohio Valley, that every earthwork is divisible by either 12 or 6.
Hmm.
And so just more evidence that these Amorites were in the Ohio Valley. And, you know, take that for what it is. But I'm going to show you some evidence here this morning that leave you with no doubt that this is who these people
were. I interrupt for a living. I tell people, hey, Fritz, this wasn't done by no Indians with a little shovel and a bucket, right? These things, which is what they've tried to tell us ever since I've been alive here, they were the Indian mounds, right? Indians didn't do this, right, Fritz?
They were not the originators of the mathematics, no. But we do know that there's two different people they talk about in the Ohio Valley. There's the Adena. These were the Amorites. These were the earliest burial mounds. And these are a lot of the geometric earthworks. But there was also the Dakota Sioux, who would be known as the Hopewell. So, yes, we do have a Native American presence. But, of course, the mathematics did not originate with the Dakota Sioux. They adopted it. But they didn't originate it. That came from the Amorites.
Gotcha. Cool. Sorry for interrupting. Keep going, man. You're on a roll.
No, I'm just want to reiterate that we have the Amorites. And, you know, these are all through the Bible. Most people aren't aware, though. Scott mentioned, you know, people don't know about the giants. They don't know about the Nephilim, who were the sons of God. Genesis 6:4, when the sons of God saw the daughters of men, these giants were born. These were mighty men, men of renown. So the Bible really doesn't cast a dark shadow, per se, on these people. And they were pagan, the same pagan religion that we're going to find throughout the Old Testament. The earthworks were aligned to different solar events, the solstices, equinox, and I'm going to show today, which is my discovery, that the giant hinge at Newark is aligned to Beltane sunrise. That's May 1st. And then at October 31st will also align to the Samhain. And this had its origins, or now we associate that with the Celts. The Celts had got that from the people that were Stonehenge. The people were Stonehenge were the Amorites. And they had adopted that. But the origins of Beltane actually is in the biblical lands and derived from the Canaanites. And the Canaanites were related to the Amorites. And very pagan. A lot of pagan in the Old Testament. I always say you would be more in tune with God to have a stone pillar in your front lawn than to go to a church that's lathered in gold on the front. Jesus came and went to many churches, he would be upset. He would take a ball bat and knock it all down. So Fritz, get rid of the gold. Yeah. That is as blasphemous as anything.
Amen. Fritz, age these things. How old are these things, these mounds? Any idea?
Yes. We can probably safely go 1,000 B.C., and we might be able to fudge 1,200, 1,300 B.C. around there, which really puts it more in tune to what we're going to find in England. I'm going to use the word henge a lot. Now, you know, Stonehenge. Now there's the stones, of course, that you're all familiar with, but around that is an earthwork, a circular ditch with an outer wall and a gateway. An interruption in the wall and a gateway is generally going to be aligned to a solar event. Stonehenge is aligned to the summer solstice sunrise, I believe. So that is the hinge. So when we talk about Newark, I'm going to talk about the hinge.
Put that back
circular
up. Fritz, we got it right now. We have that that Geller Hills up on the screen right now. Maybe you can talk about that a little bit.
All right. Well, this would be our first taste into the mathematics. Now, we do know of the Amorites that they were expert surveyors. And they're going to bring this surveying skill into the Ohio Valley. So what you're looking at right now, you're looking at the octagon, circle in the octagon. That's aligned. All those gateways are aligned to lunar events.
Folks, right up where 65 is. You can see the octagon. That's where 65 is. That's the octagon. Go ahead, Spence.
Yes.
I got a slow
one. And then lower right where it says Great Circle, that is the hinge there at Newark. What do they call it there? The circle mound, something like that.
Mound.
I'm not.
Yep.
It's not really correct. But then you go to the apex of that and you'll see Geller Hill. Geller Hill is the largest or the highest point of land there in that area. But if you draw a line from Geller Hill to the middle of the octagon and then to the middle of the hinge, it makes a perfect isosceles triangle. You can see that both of the lines from the octagon and the circle is 7,392 feet, 1.4 miles. So that means that Geller Hill was really the axis mundi of the whole site. It all began there at Geller Hill. There they drew the lines to the octagon and to the Great Circle. Geller Hill, if you go up there, you'll see some undulations at the top of the mill, and those are burial mounds. They were plowed over. And so they've kind of lost some of their definition, but this is a burial site.
Hey, Fritz, if we're talking 1,000 BC, help me out here, Fritz. How did they design this? How did they know specifically how far each plank of the triangle was perfectly formed? How'd they do that, Fritz?
Well, we know from the Amorites that they were expert surveyors. So you had to be able to survey land. Now see the octagon there, and it says 65, and see those two parallel walls?
Yep.
Those walls extended 6 miles. And those walls are a line for the rising of the star Fraumholt, I believe is how it's pronounced. So those extend in a straight line for 6 miles and are aligned to a bright star called Fraumholt. There's again an example of surveying skills. Now, from the circle attached to the great circle or the henge, the diameter of that observatory circle there on the top attached to the octagon is 1,050 feet. The length to the great circle is the diameter times 6. 6 times 1,050 will get you to the great circle, and from the middle of the octagon to that square is, again, 1,050 times 6. So we have a lot of surveying going on, and we're always going to use the numbers contained within the earthworks themselves. So you can see, though, the importance of Geller Hill, which is a park now. You can go there. And and I'm going to show you some other things.
Geller Hill, by the way, folks. So, Fritz, I want people to pick up on this, right? You could only do this, I think, if you're above it looking down. Am I wrong, Fritz? How could, think, folks, 1000 BC, what kind of instruments did they have? Fritz, how far from the Mound Builders, the octagon to Geller? How far is that, Fritz?
I would say 7,392 feet. And, that's an interesting point. Because when you're at the circle in the octagon, I mean, anyone that's visited that, you know, it's really hard to make out. I mean, you can make out the circle. You see the two parallels connecting the two. But the actual octagon, you know, you can only see about two of the walls or gateways at one time. So, you know, like LA always says, it's like, how did they check their work? Because you really can't do that. And again, it's because they were expert surveyors. So they didn't need to be above ground. However, you can only appreciate the Newark works if you are looking at it from above. So it was made for entities above.
Fritz, this wasn't done by no Indians.
Well, it was done by the Amorites, yes.
Well, so Fritz, they called Hopewell because... if I understand it right, correct me if I'm wrong, that was the guy who discovered it. Isn't that true, that he discovered this thing?
No, there was a place in Chillicothe called the Adena. It was a former governor of the state, uh-huh. And he had a large mound that was later destroyed by the Ohio Historical Society, who destroyed many of the mounds in Ohio. But his estate was called Adena.
Okay.
And that's how we got that name. However, there was a guy named Hopewell. And he was also lived outside of Chillicothe. This earthwork is also, you can still go there. But the artifacts were a little bit different. And so they called those people not after anything historical, but it was the Hopewell name. It was named after, an Anglo. So
hey, Fritz,
that's how we get.
Hey, Fritz, why Ohio?
That's a good question. I think, you know, we originate... with them coming over here because of the large copper deposits up in Isle Royal. They were mining so much copper that we have 50,000 tons that we cannot account for. Now, we'll find some bracelets and we'll find some other things in burial mounds, but there's 50,000 tons that were mined out of Isle St. Royal that there's no accounting for. And one historian estimated that it would have taken 10,000 men 1,000 years to mine all that copper up in Isle Royal. So then in the biblical lands, we all know that the Amorites, the giants led by Og, were forced out by Joshua. Many are already in England, building Stonehenge, building the many hinges, conical mounds with ditches or circles around them, like we find at Marietta, Grave Creek Mound, the largest in the Ohio Valley, there in Moundsville, also at one time had a circle or a ditch around it. So the hinges and the mounds that we find in England's landscape are identical to what we're going to find in Ohio. So many of them come here. And it was hilly. There's rivers. You have, the Ohio call it Scioto. However, that's probably Scioto. And we know that there was a princess, Scotia, who actually is a namesake of Scotland, but she takes us back to those old times as well of Amorites and the giants. So there's some historical precedence to that. There is no Native American word, Scyota or Scioto. So where did it come from? So we do have some provenance over in the British Isles for that as well.
So Fritz, let me keep us moving here, because for a lot of people, this is really, really new stuff. See if you can pull up Spencer number 3, LinkedIn. It's got a lot of great pictures in there. Fritz has got a lot of great stuff. He's got some books. We're going to get into all this, but scroll down a little bit on that, Spencer.
My Facebook page.
That's his Facebook.
Not there.
Right there. Click on that. Click on his Facebook page. Because Fritz, when I get down here, people are going to say, "Hey, where was all that information?" So Fritz Zimmerman, there's his Facebook page for those of you who don't have it, and he's got all kinds, just on and on and on and on and on. Stop right there a second, Spence. Click up here on the left above friends, the Nephilim Chronicles. That's for Fritz's books, a travel guide to the ancient ruins in the Ohio Valley. Fritz, how many books do you have, and where would they best find those?
On Ancient America 8, Mysteries of Ancient America, Volume 1, Volume 2. Now, the travel guide, I went to 700 burial mound and earthwork sites. It took me 12 years. And in Ohio, you don't know, but 70% of what you can go see is called address restricted. Address restricted by the Ohio disconnection, what I call it. Ohio historical disconnection.
Right.
Address restricted because they don't want you to go there. They feel that if you know where these burial mounds, you'll destroy them, even though most of the mounds was actually destroyed by them. So for every mound, if you go to online or something like that, for every mound that you go to, you'll pass by two. So if you want to see all the burial mounds in Ohio, get the travel guide. And, all the historical, articles that were done of excavations, et cetera, are on each site. And then I'll give you directions to everything. And then that's my first book, Nephilim Chronicles, Fallen Angels in the Ohio Valley. That was 12 years. See that circle in the middle? That's one of two circles in Charleston, West Virginia. And you can see that the circumference of that circle is 666 feet.
So folks.
Now, I know. Quickly, 666. I know that's, somebody gets changed 66 and they all flip out and everything, but you got to realize that 666 in the Bible is generally used the same way the Babylonian use it, as a number for the sun. There is a quote in their Chronicles, maybe, where they're talking about Solomon, and they bring him 666 talons of gold. Well, let's just look at the name Solomon. What does it start out with? Sol, sun. Am is Hindi for sun, and then An is an Egyptian word for sun. Sun, sun, sun. So that, and there's another thing we're talking about, the leaving Babylon. There's Adonakam. Again, Adon. It's a sun name. And with them were 666 people. And then, in the Bible it says, and let that number, but it says, let he who hath understanding count the number. And that would be the number of, Satan or the beast or whatever. But let he who hath understanding count. All right, let's count. What are we going to count? Let's count the Roman numerical system, because they were the ones that were persecuting the Jews and the Christians. So count 500. You're all familiar with Roman numerals. 500, 100, 50, 10, 5, 1. Add all those up. What do you get? 666. Let you have understanding count the number. So don't freak out if you see something 666. It's not what it means. Understand and know. Okay, can we get to our pictures? Are we going to find them?
Let's do it. Take a seat, Fritz.
Okay, here we go. All right, now we're going to look at the Newark earthworks in a way that you've never seen them before. This is color-coded. Notice that the circle is red and the square is red. That is showing that the circle and the square have equal areas. So not necessarily squaring the circle. You can't mathematically do that, but they do have the same area. And then notice that the square, a square within the octagon and the large hinge also has the same area. Now, in the ancient religions, what this did when you could combine the circle and the square, what we're dealing with is something very similar to what we would call the yin-yang of what we know now. It's the balance of nature spirits. Mm. It's the balance of the sun and the moon and the earth, mother. You don't want too much sun, the crops will burn. You don't want too much rain, the crops will flood. You always went for that balance. So that's what we're showing here, and that's what they would do within the earthwork. So again, we're showing advanced mathematics, knowledge, surveying skills to be able to lay this out.
So Fritz, you know, just for as a kind of an aside, Mound Builders Country Club, the golf course, has now been seized by some world whatever would be.
Yes. Yes, and I'm very interested. Are they mowing it?
Is anyone out there? No. And you know how those, you've been there, we've been there. You know what that's like out there. Those mounds are everywhere. And of course, you go up to the Alligator Mound, which is the top of the hill. You say they're not connected, but my goodness, it's unbelievable. So this has been.
Well, they are connected. I'm going to show you. I want to show you on another slide here how they're connected. It's fascinating.
It is fascinating.
So now I don't know if I have a slide for this, but I want to say this one more note on the mathematics here. Okay, see the green circle and then the red circle. Now the circle or the hinge, we'll be talking about the alignment of that. The circumference of that circle is 3,700 feet. The square, each side of that is 925 feet. So the sum total of the length of the sides of the square equal the circumference of the large hinge.
So they did this. They did this with little knives and little buckets and had this perfect formation, huh?
No. They did not, and there's really good evidence. I know we all hear that the mastodons were all killed off by a dozen people coming over the bridge, land bridge. There is Indian legends that these mound builders are actually using mastodons as beasts of burden and moving mass amounts of earth. Wow. So, yes, I mean, there might have been some fine-tuning with smaller implements, but no. This idea that they were using flimsy clam hose to move all this earth is ridiculous. So okay, we can go to another slide. But anyway, that's a little of the mathematics going on there at Newark.
So Fritz, so people that understand how tall, like the circle mound, how tall is that, Fritz? Each one, because it's complete circle. How tall?
I think originally from the bottom of the ditch to the top of the earthwork was about 20 foot.
20 feet.
Now, those ditches are still really deep, but you got to understand that, you know, this was built, you know,
thousands.
One of the carbon dates of the hinge was 800 BC. And Brad Lepper, because, you know, he wants to be the gatekeeper of truth, did not include that in the port because they want to say that it was built around 200 AD. But we do have carbon dating. This is from somebody that was on the dig and knew that they had suppressed that information. Earth walls are, 10, 15 foot, something like that.
Yeah.
And then you have another 10 or so down to the ditch that has been filled in, of course, over a couple thousand years. So large.
You know, I grew up in this area, the land of legend, they call it. I can drive 10 miles in any direction and see 3-4 different mounds. You know about the one?
Oh, absolutely.
All throughout. What was the purpose of them, Fritz? Why would they build these? Were they burial mounds? What was it all about?
Mounds were burials. You know, don't hear like, you know, lookout mounds. They weren't going on top. These were sacred. See, they believed in ancestral worship. So they would put their ancestors in the mounds. And a lot of times there will be ash layers. And these were people that were cremated. Then they would build a charnel house where they would hold the dead until some time. And then that charnel house would be burned. And then you'd have an ash layer, then another charnel house. And so, you know, they would incrementally get larger. But, you know, they weren't lookouts. So they were ancestral worship. So they would go to the mounds and worship their ancestors for good fortune. Not a single grave like we would have a cemetery today, not an individual, but a collective of the dead.
Mm. Amen. Okay, Fritz, I'm going to shut up and quit interrupting you. Go ahead, take us through this.
Okay, can we get to another?
I'll probably interrupt you.
All right, we can stop here. All right, another thing, it's just, this really is blows my mind. Okay, the ratio of the circle, which is 1,050 feet, and the large hinge, the ratio is the same as the apogee and the perigee moon. But what is that? Well, that is the small moon in the sky and the large moon in the sky. So the sun, the moon will get small, and then you've all seen when the, you know, the moon is very large in the sky. That is the same ratio. And that's how these things were laid out, in tune with the apogee and the perigee of the moon. Now, how they did this, I can't even say. I don't know.
What people don't get from this, Fritz, this is over acres and acres and acres. This isn't just a football field. This is a massive area that we're talking about.
Right. To give some people some context, the octagon in the circle, there is a regulation golf course within the walls of that. There's no holes outside of those walls. It's an 18-hole golf.
18 holes of golf, yeah. Inside that octagon. Where it says apogee moon and then the little octagon, there's 18 holes of golf in the middle of that. It's unbelievable.
Yes, that just gives you a reference of the size of this. So, yeah, you're right. It's not like you're doing it on a piece of paper. These are massive. And in each one of those gateways of the octagon are aligned to a lunar standstill of the most northern moon sunrise, the most southern moon sunrise, sunsets, you know. And so there's eight of these. As it takes 18.1 years for the sun to bounce from the north to the south. And each one of those gateway is on a standstill. And that's when the sun stops momentarily. So that is the function of it.
You don't think the Indians are golfers, do you, Fritz? Is that why they built a golf course there?
No, but you know what? The golf course kept it perfectly maintained, and I had no problem with them. It was beautiful. You could go out there. There were people that complained that they couldn't access it. It's like, just go in the winter. There's no golfers out there. And if there's so many trees and stuff, if you really want to see it, you want to go in the winter anyway. So it was ridiculous that they said they didn't have access. It's like, well, what do you want to do out there? You know, just go that, or, you know, go in the evening when the golfers are done, stop by the golf course, ask the guy, ask the pro, like, hey, you mind if I walk out there? He'd be like, yeah, there's, you know, it's clean. I've gone out there and done that myself. So, no, it's ridiculous. I'm really interested to see if it is being mowed. I didn't think it was going to be. So if anybody has that, I would too. Okay, let's hit another slide here.
Hey, Fritz, real quickly, while my mind goes that direction, what about the Smithsonian? Are there giant bones in the Smithsonian, Fritz? What do they do with these giants that they've discovered?
You know, we really don't know. And it's interesting because, you know, they say it's a cover-up and this, but, you know, I had mentioned earlier that Charleston, West Virginia, that was all excavated by the Smithsonian, who did report the large skeletons. Now, what happened to those? Yeah, stay on that. Stay on that. There you go.
Go back,
stay
on it. Go back to the other
one. No, that one's good right there. I think they took, because they were going everywhere and picking these skeletons up, because when Cyrus Thomas took over the Smithsonian, he said that anything that would negate that these were all Native American needed to be destroyed. And the skulls don't match those of Native Americans. And so they were seizing any of the giant skeletons and going and getting those. Even though they did report it, yes, they were going in and seizing those. And so, yeah, there is a cover up there, but we do rely on them for their reporting also, because they didn't stay away from that. A lot of time that was before Cyrus Thomas. I want you to look at this. This is the alligator mound you were asking about. One, let's look at the length of this, 210 feet. 210 times pi is going to give you 660, and that is probably the average size of a hinge in the Ohio Valley. Take 210 times 5, and you have 1050. That means it is one-fifth the size of the circle attached to that octagon, which is 1050. Again, so we're looking at a, at mathematics here, and that they were using the same length to make things. Anything a derivative of 1050 or a 210 times pi to become a 660 foot would be with that. Now, it is aligned. Look to the left. It's aligned to the May 1st Beltane sunrise and the October 31st sunset. And I was just there in the winter, and that is a clear view. So you will be able to go October 31st up on that little hill, and the sun will set in direct alignment with the length of the alligator. And I have another picture, and it'll actually show the sun coming up on May 1st there at the alligator mound.
So they understood all of this. They knew the changing of the seasons, the alignment of the sun, the moon. They understood all of it. How did they know this stuff, Fritz? This is before public schools, even, heaven forbid, right?
Well, I mean, that was part of their religion, was to mark the seasons, which also we have in the Bible, Genesis 1:14, before you think this is all pagan and all should be destroyed, you know, God creates the heavens and let them be the signs for the seasons, the days, and the years.
Hmm.
This is in the Bible. Let the stars, let the moon, let the sun, let these be markers for you for the different seasons. So there's nothing, you know, derogatory pagan. This is part of, you know, the canon of the Old Testament of what we're doing here. So yeah, this was in, and then May 1st, though, is not something that is ever practiced by Native Americans. Of course, we know it's Celtic, and then it has its roots with the ancient Levant in Israel and, you know, Jordan and in the area where along the Jordan where these giants lived. There's another slide in here. There's some with suns coming up and coming down. If we can find those, I'll show people the actual alignment. Oh, back one. Okay. This is the Penge. Right in the middle there, you're going to see that little house or building. That is the that's the museum there at the Henge there in Newark. You can see the ditch coming around to the left and to the right. So these people, Ohio History Convention, built their museum in alignment. That's May 1st. That's May 1 sunrise right there. So you can see it's in perfect alignment with that gateway.
Every May 1st, that's where it comes up. Right, Fritz? Every May 1st, that's where the sun
comes. Every May 1st. Yep. You can go out there onto the Eagle Mound or Bird Mound in the center, and it'll line right up with that gateway. The only thing is you have to wait for the sun to clear the museum because – I'm sorry, but the Ohio History Connection are idiots to have built their museum on a gateway of a solar temple. Can you imagine somebody building a building on the gateway of Stonehenge? Well, they did it in Ohio. So there you go. Now I have another picture, and it's going to even be more dramatic. And it's actually cooler to see if we can blow that up a little bit. Okay, now this is October 31st. That's coming up here real soon. You can stand there at the gateway, and the sun is going to set directly on that alignment. And to these people, it was Halloween. It had the same meanings. It was a time when the veil between the living and the dead was at its thinnest. And so here in the ancient religion, this is when they could take the material and transform it into the spiritual. So this is it's a functioning site. For the dead, this is when you would commune with your ancestors, because here they would be because of this veil. And this was temple. This Henge was made to facilitate that.
So but Fritz, if I understand it right, then in the morning you come on towards what the camera, because the camera were to come towards me more. That's where they do the sacrifices. There's a mound out in the middle of the circle mound where they did sacrifices on this day. Is that true, Fritz, or am I fibbing here?
No, there's no evidence. Now, I think they did do sacrifices, And that might be the octagon, might have been sacrifices. I don't know that. Now, that was a charnel house there in the middle. So there was dead in there. So those two wings were like long buildings. And again, the dead would have been kept. They would have allowed the birds to carry in feeders, debone the flesh. And then they would have been bundled. They would have been put in the charnel house. And at some time that would have been burned, the remains cremated, and then another one gone on top. And so I believe it was intended to be a bird to show transition from one world to the next is kind of what we're looking at, a transition of the soul. And so, no, there was dead out there, but we don't have any evidence there was sacrifice. It could have happened. I'm not going to say it didn't, but we don't have any evidence of that. But we do know that was a major burial site there in the center.
So, Fritz,
but it is dramatic. It's dramatic to see this, more so than the rising sun going there on October 31st. Go ahead. Sorry.
So, Fritz, we take you out to Fairmount Cemetery. I know you're familiar with that, with that big mound up there at the top of Fairmount Cemetery. And it's some way aligned with the Glenford Fort. And then the other way is Flint Ridge. This is all connected together, all of this.
Yes.
And,
yes.
And we've been giving credit to the Hopewell Indians for having done this, when really there's no evidence they did. Right, Fritz?
No, I believe most things around there was early Adena. Adena or Amorite. These are all Amorite temples and burial mounds.
Give us the date again.
Which you only know when they're large and conical like that, that's an Adena mound. You see something that's a little lower and kind of rounded. It's, you know, the diameter is greater, but it's really not that high. That's more of a Hopewellian type mound. But when you see these big conical mounds, okay, this screen here, that's what I had mentioned before. The circumference of the henge, 3,700 feet. Each of the walls of the square, 925. So, again, some really crazy math going on right there, advanced mathematics. And so these were meant not only to be sacred geometry, but numerology. So you wanted the length to correspond with the circles and the squares. So now see, the square represented the material. That is the earth. And the circle is the spiritual.
Wow.
So what we're looking at is that transformation from the material, the square, into the spiritual, the circle.
Wow.
Now, do you see how there is a walkway from the square over to the circle, the hinge?
Mm-hmm.
The hinge, which we just saw, that's the same one we just saw on May 1st, October 31. There you see that effigy in the middle there. So they are connected. These aren't there. It's all together to work in conjunction with other for a spiritual purpose.
Okay. We got about 15 minutes left here. Any more? I know these people got thousands of questions. Do you want to take questions or you want to continue to show some of this, Fritz?
Yeah, we can take some questions. That's fine. Let's go.
Okay, Mel, let's bring in Mel because she grew up. Mel, she's very familiar with this area. Those of us who live in this Licking County area, this is really, we know what this is all about. People who are not here don't understand this, but this, our whole community is built around the mounds, Mound Builders Country Club, Mound City Little League. Come on in, Mel.
Yeah, I grew up in the 1970s within walking distance of the Circle Henge. So that was kind of the area that, and we were always told that it was the Indians. And I'm curious about that right square, Coach. Do you know where that is?
Yeah, there's a very small piece of that. That's not actually the square. You see those two verticals going to the right? That little corner right there, you can still go see that. It's over... 79, whatever the road is, it goes right by that.
Yep.
You got to jump over. You can go online and get directions to it, but there is a small section of those walls that you still can see. And of course, I have directions to that in the travel guide as well.
I work right along Raccoon Creek at a hotel over there. And when they put in that intersection, they found some artifacts when they were digging around in there. I also have a friend who lives in a different area. She has mounds on her property, and Ohio State comes in and they do research there at her place. So if you guys are ever in town and want to take a look at that, I can get you connected with her. But yeah, just I've done some reading on this with the Smithsonian. I just feel like it's such a shame. But thank you so much for your work. I guess I don't really have a question, but I am right here. I do drive by. They are mowing the mounds, but just kind of like they did with the Circle Mound, like not great. It doesn't, I mean, when the golf course was there, like they kept it in, you know, pristine condition, but now it's just getting kind of it's mowed, but it doesn't look great.
So Fritz,
That's what I thought would happen to it. Thank you.
Just your guess, Fritz, if they excavated some of these things, would they find bones in there? You think, Fritz, are these burial sites or are these directional? What do you see them to be, Fritz?
With the octagon?
Well, just in general, all these mounds of, like,
they're all burials. There's all burials. I mean, they could be as few as like one person. There could be thousands, and that's what I'm talking about. You're going to hit these ash layers where, you know, hundreds of people were cremated, and then they would put dirt over that, build another charnel house, and they would start layering up.
What was a charnel house?
They're all burials.
What was a charnel house?
A charnel house is a building where they would take the dead. They would take the bones and they would keep them in there.
Let me ask you another question about that. I'm sorry, but like the cairn that was up there above your house, Coach, that was destroyed to build Buckeye Lake Dam. Right. Do you think that cairn has anything to do with the mounds? I know there's some ancient Hebrew artifacts found in there, like a Decalogue. I just didn't know if there was any connection on that.
Fritz, from what I understand, Fritz, I'm sure you're aware of this. The largest pyramid in North America was that right over there, Legend Valley, where that concert venue is now. The base, we went up there before. Remember that, Fritz, when we went up there? And
yeah,
there was a huge pyramid there, wasn't there?
Yeah, it was 60 foot. It was 60 foot of stone. It took 5,000 wagon loads is what they took out of that, if you can imagine. Each one of those wagons, I think, was 2 tons of rock. And there were 5,000 that they removed from there. And yes, they did find a Hebrew script. Now, keep in mind that the Amorites were a Semitic people. They spoke Hebrew. Hmm. And so it's no doubt that we would find that. And we'd also know there was definitely intermingling always between the Hebrews and the Amorites. So to find some Hebrew relating to the Ten Commandments wouldn't be historically out of place. But yes, they would have spoke Hebrew. They would have written Hebrew. So it's not out of the question that we would find that there. But yeah, and that circle, that stone, that had a circle around it as well, just like we would find over in the British Isles. At one time, there was a ditch going around it.
Fritz, I've heard the theory that one of the theories is these things were created supernaturally, whatever angels, whatever created a whirlwind. What's your thought on that, Fritz?
Well, now you're somewhat correct on that, because we know from the Book of Enoch about the giants is that they were given secrets, the secrets of math, the secrets of following the moon, of following the sun, of following the stars. Everything that is laid out in the Book of Enoch, as far as the secrets that was given to the Nephilim, this hybrid race of the sons of God and women, we're going to find in the Ohio Valley. So, the origins, the genesis of what they knew begins with this Genesis 6:4.
Wow. Why the Ohio Valley, Fritz?
Well, I think because of the rivers and because of the hills, you'll always find burial mounds in hilly country.
The Appalachian Mountains. The Appalachian Mountains begin right here for sure. First foothill.
Yeah, and you can make your way east via West Virginia back to the east. Now, we have things like America's Stonehenge, and that takes us back into the megalithic era. And we are going to find some megalithic earthworks in the Ohio Valley. So we do have that bridge between Stonehenge, which is a megalithic work. And then hinges in England would go from having stones to having burial mounds in the center, just like we see with the hinge and the eagle, of having a mound in the center. And what we'll find in Indiana mounds and mounds around Chillicothe, there'll be burial mounds in those. So there is a bridge there, and it's probably something we could talk on for an hour. But anyway, just a note of it.
Okay, Fritz, just try to. This is fascinating. We need you on for about a week, by the way. They said, please ask Fritz about the connection between the mounds and the supernatural happenings, Bigfoot sightings, UFOs, orbs. Is there a spiritual connection, you think, Fritz?
Yes. I actually have started something called Ancient Paranormal. I'm doing paranormal investigations at some of these sites. In the Book of Enoch, we know that it says that the spirits of the giants will be earthbound. They are there. That is why it is so haunted. Wow. Every one of these burial mound sites, earthwork sites, they're haunted. The spirits are still there. And that is told in the Book of Enoch because they're earthbound. And I had alluded to that earlier, that they were ancestral worshipers. They were worshiping their ancestors at these burial mounds because their spirits were still there.
So Fritz, are some of these things interdimensional? Are they, is Bigfoot, that kind of stuff, are they able to appear?
Yes. They are ghosts. That's why, you know, we got every hayseed, from Washington to Maine out there trying to shoot a Bigfoot. They'll never do it. It's a ghost. You can't shoot a ghost.
Wow.
But no, they can. So they are apparitions, but they are definitely connected, as is Mothman. They're on the Ohio River. Yeah, they are ghosts. And now, so what's interesting about Mothman is, real quick, is Native Americans called that Piasu. And you're all familiar with the movie The Exorcist, that winged demon,
yeah,
dog-faced, red-eyed. That was a Babylonian demon, a demon of the wind. Its name was Pazuzu.
Mm.
So Piasu, Pazuzu, it's one and the same, Babylonian. All roads always lead to Babylon in the Ohio Valley.
Fritz, I'll get you in there, Rochelle, Ray. Hang on. Fritz, I came across this thing called Mud Fossil University. Have you ever seen about that? Is it possible? How big do you think some of these giants were, Fritz?
The largest mound, our largest skeletons on record, was in Coshocton County, not far from you in Newark. There were four skeletons. They were all 9'6". That's the largest. Mud fossils, it's ridiculous. It's completely untrue. Okay. Anything you see above 9 foot, take it with a grain of salt. They weren't 10 foot. They weren't 11 foot, 12, 18 foot. No, no, and no. They were large beings. I saw somebody popped in about Og's bedstead. I know it's gotten big, like 15. Probably the most realistic interpretation of that is 9'6", which would corroborate with what the largest skeleton in the Ohio Valley was, which was around 9'6". So giants, yes, but not fee-fi-fo-fum giants, 9-foot giants. But when you see 12, 15 foots, no, there's no historical, proof that any of that was true.
Rochelle, come on in.
This is fascinating.
Have you heard any of this in your church? Anybody ever talk about this in your church? Go ahead.
Unfortunately, what brought me to the Lord was giants. Okay. Cause I had witnessed I had looked through, I'd seen the bones. I'm like, this is amazing. And it's in the Bible. So the reason they hide this stuff is to keep you from your Bible, or to make you think the Bible is just a bunch of fairy tales. I sent Coach last week, maybe 2 weeks ago, I sent him a quick clip that they had found Egyptian writing there in those mounds in Ohio. Just more proof that we are way more connected than we thought. But I was wondering, what are your thoughts on them having this numeric base of 12? Like ours is a numeric base of 10. We have 10 fingers. Do you think their numeric base is 12 because they had 12 fingers?
Wow.
Well, that's an interesting And now that does exist. No. L.A. Marzulli actually has skeletons of a giant with 12 fingers. However, you say where our base isn't 12. Well, look at your clock. Look at your calendar.
I mean, in look 10, at, like 10, look 20, at the, 30, 100.
Well, I mean, theirs was base 12, and it's really, it is the origins of our clock. It is the origins of our calendar. The origin of the, Aquarius, Virgo, all that, 12 houses, astrology, you know, with the 12. Now, we do have a base 10, but we do use a base 12 as well. I mean, it's there. So when you look at a clock, you're looking at Babylon. When you look at your calendar, you're looking at Babylon. When you look at a 12-inch foot, you're looking at Babylon. So we do have that incorporated. So, you know, yeah, we do use 10, but we also use 12 a lot.
Wow, Randy, come on in. Randy.
Can I ask one more question on your thoughts?
Quick, man, quick. You can't hear you. You went mute.
There's a theory that before the flood, the giants were larger, and then after the flood, with Nimrod becoming a Gibberim, found out another way to become a giant.
What do you think, Fritz?
I think the bloodline came through Noah, Noah's wives. It's the best way we can explain that. The actual size of the giants pre-flood, post-flood, really hard to say. And in my mysteries, we have a whole thing on Nimrod, Semiramis, how we're so connected with her still today. Everything in Easter is Semiramis, with Ham and everything, and you know, it's crazy. But
we're running out of time. Where do they get your books, Fritz? Where do they get your books?
Go on Amazon. Everything's there. Fritz Zimmerman, look me up, author. But Encyclopedia of Giants, you know, if you want to see all the mounds in Ohio, the travel guide, if you want to get into all the numerology,
Spencer, fill that up on Amazon.
That's Fallen Angels.
There it is, folks, on Amazon. Good, great stuff, man. Great. Paperback's only $14.99. Come on. You really want to know what's going on, get yourself educated. There, always put that in the chat. Fritz Zimmerman. Randy, quickly.
Yeah, thanks, Fritz, for all your research, brother. It's going to be generationally used, believe me. We're just still dumb. But one question: do you know about the Strait of Gibraltar, where they call Joshua the robber, you know, in the rock? Isn't that a good sign that when they left in the Phoenician ships, they were master builders? They went all over the world, going out of the Mediterranean. They went all over the world, pretty much, haven't they, Fritz?
Yes. You know, the megalithic people are found throughout the Pacific, India. You know, the megaliths throughout there. Yeah, they went all over the world. And you know, I showed there they were surveyors, and they use that surveying to also in the oceans to be able to navigate as well.
Fritz, we only got about a minute and a half before we got the live show ends. So, Fritz, this is all scriptural, right? Genesis 6, book of the Giants, Book of Enoch. Why has this stuff been hidden from us, Fritz?
Well, I mean, it's not hidden. It's there to find. Of course, the Bible has been heavily censored, just like your sermons in the mornings have been heavily censored.
Amen.
You know, when I was growing up, I would always ask about the Old Testament, and they would say, well, we don't follow that. And like, that was always very confusing to me of growing up, is like, well, could I hand my Bible in and you can tell me the stuff that we don't believe in? Can you tear those pages out for me?
Amen.
I see you carry the whole Bible with you, but you only believe half of it. So could you just take those pages out, so I know exactly what church you belong to?
There you go, brother. There you go. So, Fritz, I want everybody to know out there, we're going to get together with you in L.A., and we're going to have a conference here. I live right in the middle of it all, man. Living it all, and let people come and see and understand. Fritz, they've lied to us, haven't they?
Every day. Every day. From academia to church in the morning.
Yeah. Left Wing Chronicles. There it is on Facebook. Go, folks, be some good reading, some great information. Fritz, thanks for joining us. Hang in there right there. We'll do a little bit of an after show. Appreciate it, folks. There were giants in the earth in those days and also afterwards. Isn't that something? See you tomorrow.